ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Text 5 and 6 of chapter 17. These two verses are translated together by Srila Prabhupada. Ashastra vihitang gaurang tapyante ye tapo janaha dambha hankara sangyukta kama raga balan vitaha karshayanta shariristham bhuta gramam achetasah mam chaivanta shariristham tan vidhyasura nischayan. Translation: those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. Purport: there are persons who manufacture modes of austerity and penance which are not mentioned in the scriptural injunctions. For instance, fasting for some ulterior purpose, such as to promote a purely political end, is not mentioned in the scriptural directions. The scriptures recommend fasting for spiritual advancement, not for some political end or social purpose. Persons who take to such austerities are, according to Bhagavad Gita, certainly demoniac. Their acts are against the scriptural injunctions and are not beneficial for the people in general. Actually, they act out of pride, false ego, lust, and attachment for material enjoyment. By such activities, not only is the combination of material elements of which the body is constructed disturbed, but also the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself living within the body. Such unauthorized fasting or austerities for some political end are certainly very disturbing to others. They are not mentioned in the Vedic literature. A demoniac person may think that he can force his enemy or other parties to comply with his desire by this method, but sometimes one dies by such fasting. These acts are not approved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and He says that those who engage in them are demons. Such demonstrations are insults to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are enacted in disobedience to the Vedic scriptural injunctions. The word achetasaha is significant in this connection. Persons of normal mental condition must obey the scriptural injunctions. Those who are not in such a position neglect and disobey the scriptures and manufacture their own way of austerities and penances. One should always remember the ultimate end of the demoniac people as described in the previous chapter. The Lord forces them to take birth in the wombs of demoniac persons. Consequently, they will live by demoniac principles life after life without knowing their relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If, however, such persons are fortunate enough to be guided by a spiritual master who can direct them to the path of Vedic wisdom, they can get out of this entanglement and ultimately achieve the supreme goal. This chapter began with Arjuna asking Krishna about people who have faith and act according to that faith, and they perform religious activities but not according to the scriptural injunctions, because the previous chapter, which mostly describes the behavior and attitude of demoniac people, ended with two verses in which Krishna emphasized the need to follow scriptural injunctions. Yashastra vidimudsrija vartite kamakarita nasasitim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. Krishna said that those who disregard scriptural injunctions and act according to their own whims cannot attain perfection or happiness or the supreme destination. Tasmat Shastra. I'll have to look it up. Karya Karya Vyavastito. Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastito. Gyatva Shastra Vidhana Tam Karyam Kartamiharhasi. Krishna says, therefore, one should know what is in the scripture. It's the duty of every person to know what is in the scripture. And to tasmat shastram pramanam, and to act accordingly in this world. So then Arjuna asked, well, there are a lot of people who are religious, but they don't exactly follow the scriptures, or they have their own means and methodologies of being good, just like in the modern age, recently in the last few years, the doctrine of humanism has received a big boost from the preachings of the Richard Dawkins and company. You may not know. There are advantages to not knowing English. You don't get subjected to all this stuff. Who propound that, well, morality can be ascertained by humans. There's no need of any God or scripture. So Arjuna, he raised this doubt. Because there are many people who appear to be very religious. And Krishna himself, here in this verse, in his reply, alludes to those persons who perform severe austerities and may appear to be, to many people, to be highly spiritually advanced. They perform severe austerities. Recently, Kumbh Mela was held at Prayagraj, modernly known as Allahabad. Modern means for the last few hundred years. All the paparazzi of the world, giving up all the kings and queens and film stars, went to photo the maybe more photogenic in some ways, babas and sadhus of India, including the famous sitting on the bed of thorns type, the type who hold their hand in the air all the time so that it just withers away, becomes atrophied, and the ones with nails growing and growing and growing and growing. Of course, among the babas, who's got the longest hair, matted hair? That's a sign of prestige. And it's a pretty petty pleasure that you sit in a cave and every 12 years you come out and show to others how your hair has grown in the last 12 years. The prestige of having long, long hair. Everything comes from India. Hippie movement also started in India. So, they're very austere, no doubt. But Krishna doesn't give credence to such austerities. Ashastra vihitam ghauram. Those which ghauram tapyante ye tapojanaha. Those who perform austerities, severe austerity. Ghora means severe or something horrible, it's intense and horrible, just like it's often said, Ghora Kali Yuga, intense and horrible. So, but it's not according to Shastra. So Krishna doesn't accept that this is something actually religious. He says just the opposite, and he is the measure of what is ultimately, what is religious actually. I mean, we have our human perspective of what is religious, and we have bona fide religions according to the what men think are bona fide religions, and we have what Krishna thinks is a bona fide religion. And Krishna says, dharmaṁ tu sākṣāt bhagavat pranītam. Dharma, roughly translated as religion, is that which is enunciated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Krishna himself. So Krishna says he doesn't like this. He doesn't consider it to be proper. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada three times refers to fasting for some political purpose and says it's demoniac. Well, a famous faster for political purpose was a person who was very prominent in some ways in the life of Srila Prabhupada. That is Mahatma Gandhi, who, for instance, after the independence and bifurcation of India, when the Pakistan said, hey, you kept all the money and arms in India, you should give us our fair share. And from Delhi, they said, forget it. And then Mahatma Gandhi went on a fast and said, you have to be fair and give them the weapons. Which, so because Mahatma Gandhi fasted, then they gave him the weapons and the money, and then they organized themselves and attacked India. And also, Mahatma Gandhi and others had, this is what you don't get in the book, because Prabhupada said you can say it, but you can't, shouldn't put it in writing. Mahatma Gandhi and others had presented the struggle for Indian independence as a religious struggle, because people in India previously were not much politically conscious. That was the affair of the Kshatriyas. You know, there are descriptions that the Kshatriyas they'd be fighting in one field and the farmer would be plowing in the next field. And he doesn't care who wins. Doesn't make any difference to him. Whoever's in charge, he just has to give them some amount of his produce. That's all. That's what Kshatriyas do. They fight. They do politics. It's up to them. So the people in India, it was difficult to get them politically aroused, but it's very easy to get them religiously aroused. So Mahatma Gandhi would go around and present it as a religious cause. So people thought, okay, we'll get India independent and then we'll stop cow slaughter, which people, for Hindus previously, was just something that was just horrible. So it was just completely horrible that they're killing cows. But then they got independence and they said, okay, let's stop cow slaughter. Mahatma Gandhi said, no, because you have to respect all religions, and Muslims, they like to kill cows. So that was the end of that. So, fasting for political reasons, this was made into an art form, to use that cliche, by Mahatma Gandhi, and it's going on till the present day. It's part of Indian politics, like Telangana and all that kind of thing, for those of you who know, which probably means only Gauranga Prasad and Balakrishna. Anyway, it's going on. You know that guy, he fasted to death. Lasted for about a day or two. They'd, Yeah. He didn't, you know, there was no, he wasn't going to die. It was just a show. But in Northern Ireland, about 25 years ago or so, these IRA prisoners, they wanted special political prisoner status. And they said, well, if you don't give it, one of them said, if you don't give it to us, we'll fast to death. And so one of them was fasting, and Maggie Thatcher, the Prime Minister of England, said, okay, fast to death. Okay, we don't mind. So one died, another died, one after another. So Maggie Thatcher was pleased. They didn't get their political status. But Prabhupada says it's all demoniac, because it's not. There's no such shastric thing as fasting for political reasons. There is tapasya. Tapasya is lauded in Shastra. Here in Bhagavad Gita, tapasya or tapaha is mentioned in this verse. It's mentioned several times before that also. What is that verse? Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmayamam upashrita bahavo jnana tapasa. Putamad Bhavam Agataha. Krishna says that many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, being freed from attachment, fear, and anger. Many, many persons in the past became Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, their minds absorbed in me, taking shelter of me, becoming purified by knowledge and tapasya, austerity. They came to me. And elsewhere Krishna says that at the end of chapter 8, he says that one who has knowledge of this this process of simply thinking of Krishna and going back to Godhead, this surpasses all, among other things, tapasya. He describes himself as the ultimate enjoyer of all tapasya. Bhuktaram yagya tapasam. So tapasya is mentioned as a bona fide process and one that can help in the development of Krishna consciousness, one that is not essential. It's not the essence, it is... The essence is not tapasya, but the essence is love of Krishna. But that is required to, generally that's required to help one to advance on the spiritual path. As Rishabdev said, he famously for us, because Srila Prabhupada quoted Rishabdev saying, Nayang deho deha bhajam riloke kashtan kama narhate virbhujamye. The first line of the verse says that, Rishabdev says that, having attained this human life, one should not live like a stool eating pig. It's graphic. Graphic, you have that word in your... It's makes it clear, and it's not beating around the bush, so to say. Not a vague description. And he uses, one should not work hard simply to attain the kind of pleasures which stool-eating pigs get without working hard. Kashta means difficulty. But then he says, tapo divyam, one should perform divine austerity. So he says, he doesn't say don't undertake difficulties, he says do undertake difficulties. But tapo divyam yena putraka shudyed, tapo divyam yena putraka shudyed, brahma sokyam tvanantam. I lost some of the lines. But anyway, the purport is, that by, performing divine austerities, one can attain that platform by which one attains unlimited spiritual bliss. Yena sattvam shudhyat. Yes, that's important. Sattvam shud. That one can purify one's existence and attain to the state of unlimited spiritual bliss. So, tapasya is required for spiritual advancement. Actually, the word tapasya, that is sometimes translated as austerity and sometimes as penance. And there is a difference. There is a penance is austerity, but austerity is not always penance. One may live in an austere condition, but not out of choice, because one is, by one's karmic fate, one is put in such a condition. But penance means to voluntarily accept difficulty for the sake of getting something better in future. So, everyone performs... the very nature of this world is that one has to perform some austerity, or one has to undergo some austerity. Not in the heavenly planet so much. There's not really much austerity there, but on most of this planet, with maybe the exception of Hawaii, as Srila Prabhupada said when he was there, that if there's any happiness on this earth, it's in Hawaii. I've never been there, but it's apparently a very gorgeous kind of place. Anyone been there? Less likely. Well, the climate's nice all the year round, food grows nice, and well, it would have been nicer before American people decided that it would be better to be part of America. And now also it's highly radioactive because of the Japanese atomic power plant bust, which it'll be, they don't tell everyone that, but there's radioactive waves going out there on and on and on, and will do so for thousands of years. So you can have radioactive papayas from Hawaii. Everyone has to undergo some austerity, but penance means to voluntarily accept difficulty. But that may be, as Krishna says, let's get back. First of all, generally that is for some religious motive. Now, religious is not necessarily spiritual. You can perform penance for some religious motive, that some material motive, which is at the same time somewhat pious. For instance, Katyayani Vrata. We hear in the Bhagavatam of the gopis of Vrindavan performing Katyayani Vrata, which is a vow that unmarried girls perform to get a good husband by worshipping Katyayani, by bathing early in the morning in the cold river and eating only Havishyanna, that's raw rice and dal boiled together without any spices or any such things, and you only take that once a day. So it's some severe austerity, and it's religious to satisfy the goddess Katyayani, manifestation of Durga, for the sake of getting a good husband. So that's considered pious. Good husband means one who should be, among other things, he should be himself dharmic. He should be religious. Not good husband doesn't mean only good, young, good-looking, and well-behaved, and sufficient means of living comfortably. Money in the modern age, that means money. But he should be following dharma. So that's religious, but it's materially motivated. And one can perform penances for going to the heavenly planets. So it's religious, but it's materially motivated. And there's spiritual penance also. Tapo devyam putraka yena sattvam shudhyad yasmad brahma sokyam tu ananta. Spiritual penance means that one accepts some difficulty for the sake of purifying one's existence, becoming free from material desire. So there is a very great difference. Even though both are religious, the kind of penance that is undertaken for fulfilling material desires in a religious way is quite different. It's a different attitude to that of undertaking penance for the sake of getting free from material desires. Undertaking austerity with the idea that, well, now I will not enjoy, but later I'll enjoy more. And the penance by which one thinks that, okay, I'm withdrawing myself from enjoyment because I understand that material enjoyment binds us in this material world, so I want to get free from that. So that means entering into a life of sustained austerity. But of course, Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam, that is sustainable if one is enjoying or even begins to enjoy a higher kind of enjoyment. One withdraws oneself from sense objects and sense enjoyment. And in these two verses here, Krishna refers to another kind of austerity in which one performs very severe austerities for the sake of some material aim, and not really propitiating any demigod or god. That means to satisfy for the sake of getting a boon, propitiating. But to just to, as if forcibly, to get some power. A great example is Hiranyakashipu, who performed austerities, and by the power of his austerity, he disturbed the universe. And then Brahma was as if obliged to offer him various boons, which he then used to torture the universe. Although later, Nrsimhadev told Brahma, well, if that kind of thing ever happens again, don't give that kind of boon. Although exactly what Brahma should have done in that circumstance, well, I guess he should have asked Vishnu what to do, because it was a case of Brahma giving boons to Hiranyakashipu to stop the immediate disturbance that Hiranyakashipu was causing, but Hiranyakashipu just caused similarly distressing disturbances, but just in a different way. We see also that Dhruva Maharaj, by his austerities, also disturbed the universe, although that wasn't exactly his purpose, but just by the power of his austerity. So we can see that there are some subtle laws of the universe, that if you if someone can perform severe austerities, harmonious interaction of all the different elements, which goes on according to Krishna's plan, Maya Dhyakshena Prakritihi, under Krishna's supervision, that short circuits the system, and the universe doesn't function properly. So austerities do have some power. We see also, just like, for instance, you might have seen photos of some sadhus, or you might have personally seen sadhus, or Buddhists, or maybe even Christians, or whatever, who perform austerities, and they get some mystic powers by doing so. I think you were telling me, was it? Oh, Gokul was telling me once about these Greek monks, and they perform severe austerities, and they get mystic powers, and their faces actually become bright and glowing. By withdrawing from sense gratification, even without a clear understanding of Krishna, one becomes enriched with mystic powers, if you consider that an enrichment. Well, it is a higher platform than simply earning money and going to the shopping mall. It is a higher level of consciousness, or a higher level of attainment. However, Krishna says that such persons are demons. And even though Srila Prabhupada here alluding to Mahatma Gandhi and others, even though in some ways Srila Prabhupada also thought that Mahatma Gandhi was somewhat saintly, and much of what Srila Prabhupada said about simple living and high thinking, of course, it wasn't Mahatma Gandhi's original idea, but it was something that Mahatma Gandhi promoted a lot. And Srila Prabhupada did also. I mean, this simple living and high thinking idea, it wasn't invented by Srila Prabhupada. It was invented by Krishna. and various people throughout the ages, especially since the advent of the Industrial Revolution and the world colonization by European powers, have talked about going back to the land, and Srila Prabhupada also took that up with bringing it to perfection, that it's not simply simple living and a vague notion of high living, but high living means Krishna consciousness. But definitely it was something that Mahatma Gandhi promoted, and when Srila Prabhupada was promoting it, first of all in India, he was aware that when he was writing these things in his early Back to Godhead magazines, that others who read this would immediately recognize that this is Mahatma Gandhi's message, that of living simply, without big industries. And Srila Prabhupada added to that the clear... Of course, Mahatma Gandhi also spoke about religion and this and that, but Srila Prabhupada made it very clear that religion means Krishna consciousness. But this severe austerities for some political purpose... Of course, Krishna doesn't say that exactly in this verse, but Srila Prabhupada, in these verses, but Srila Prabhupada relates it, what Krishna says here, the general principle that Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, which spans all phases of existence in this material world, in all yugas, on all planets, and Srila Prabhupada brings it to the point of this world, this planet, in this modern era. So, everyone performs austerities. It's, you can't avoid it. In fact, this place, Lika, it's also quite an austere place to live in. If we say it's an austere place, well, what do we mean by that? Well, we mean that it has long, cold winters. That's the main thing. And this hot weather we've been having here is atypical. This rain that we just had, a cloud burst, but that's more typical of our, generally our festivals here have been marked by plenty of rain and cold weather. So it's quite an austere place to live. It doesn't mean that everyone who lives here is a yogi. They're austere, but they're not yogis. So everyone undergoes some kind of austerity. But penance means that deliberately undertaken difficulty in a sustained and regulated way with a vow for a particular purpose, religious or non-religious. And that which is not according to the scriptures and which is severe and which tortures the body, Krishna says that that is demoniac. So austerity, especially in Kali Yuga, people live very, very difficult lives. Everyone lives a difficult life. That word austerity is quite commonly seen in the news these days. Austerity measures, because the big rich people who are already so rich, they stole even more of the money of the... So the common people have to live more. Oh, be careful what you say. I could vanish for saying this. Well, I'm not big enough to vanish, but if you get big enough and you say these things, you might do. But the people have to suffer, or so they have to pay trillions of dollars of debt, which some people by legal means stole. And so we hear that Obama says the Greeks should undertake more austerities. Austerity measures, that means less payouts to drug addicts and unmarried women. No, unmarried women, they're not going to cut down on that. That would be political suicide. But in general, less for the people, more taxes with less benefits. So everyone in Kali Yuga, just life in general, is just so difficult for people to support their families. Srila Prabhupada said that he wrote that in Kali Yuga, to maintain a family is more difficult than maintaining a whole empire. It's what previously the kings, if you see the in the Mahabharata, it's described the daily duties of a king. And, there's time for recreation and then listening to accounts from the Puranas and then practice some physical exercise and some time for practicing weapons, but people in the modern age, they don't have that much facility. They're just working 10 hours, 12 hours, if they can get any work at all. So it's a great anxiety to maintain families and now people whose forefathers for untold generations have lived on the same land, the same people living on the same land, to take the same water out of the well, they have to pay. Now you have to pay for the well water, which is on your land. For instance, the governments, that's the advantage of being in the European Union. So they make life so difficult, so tough. I guess I should say at this point, it's a good point to say that many of you are offering dakshina or monetary and other offerings to myself. So I appreciate that you have to work very hard for that, and it's a sacrifice for all of you. And I promise I'll engage it all in Krishna's service so that it won't get misused. It is appreciated. I mean, I don't lavishly say thank you, but I do know that you're all struggling in various ways, so yes, it is appreciated. Very difficult life in Kali Yuga, very austere in many ways, but still the whole atmosphere is so bad that people, instead of taking shelter of Krishna, they take shelter of horrible activities like intoxication, illicit sex, fantasies, computer games. They can literally play at being God. They can zap some imaginary invader from outer space and get some feeling. Ah, I did it. But it's just imagination. And you might think that computer games, okay, they're for kids, but they're not just for kids. They're for grown-up people who never really grew up. Their intelligence never developed. They remained a child. It's a very strange situation to try to instruct people or give them knowledge of their real self-interest, but they're not interested to listen because they just want to run off and find a corner and play a computer game. So, and then they can forget to eat and drink or work or sleep, or they just get so absorbed that they're already living in a dream world, this world of imagination. They make another dream. Very sad that people are attracted to these things and not attracted to their real self-interest. Actually, these verses, I was thinking of speaking on them recently when I was in Dubai, which is a part of the United Arab Emirates, which is a state which is, it's predominantly Muslim, although probably in Dubai more Hindus live there now, but the official residents are almost all, if not all, Muslims. So I was there, that's just at the beginning of Ramadan, in which there is the austerity of fasting without water from sunrise to sunset, which many Muslims even now follow. In Bosnia, any Bosnian devotee? Where's that? Revati? Many, they follow that, huh? They follow it. In some Muslim places they don't, but many, many do. And in the heat, it's very hot there. It's, at that time of year when I was there, then every day the temperature will go 45 and above. It doesn't get cool at night. So when Ramadan, because it falls, because it's according to the lunar calendar, so it it falls at different times of the year. Now it's in the hottest time of the year, so it's a very severe austerity to follow that. And previously also, when there was no air conditioning in Dubai, it would have been much more so. So many Muslims follow that for religious reasons. They think we're Muslims, we should follow. You're allowed to eat between sunset and sunrise. And it seems, or so I'm told, that many Muslims during the month of Ramadan, they eat more than they do at other times of the year, because you're also from Muslim background. They have the first is the iftar, which is the breaking the fast. And then after, about 2 hours after, they have breakfast with iftar, which means they eat dates is traditional in those countries, and some little skewered things on meat. What's that called? Shish kebab. And just some snacks, which is quite a meal. And then about 2 hours after that, they have two or three hours, they have a huge meal. Then they wake up early in the morning with all that stuff. I don't know how it's digested. Well, that's the problem. And then before sunrise, they have another huge meal. So they eat a lot. And then they don't drink at all in the day in this severe heat. So they're pretty, not a lot of work gets done during that month. And at the end of it, one doctor told me they have a lot of cases of kidney stone problems because people don't drink water and it's very difficult for the kidneys. So kidney stones are very common. Now, the original purpose of this Ramadan, which is still followed to some extent, is to do a lot of, not just fasting, but a lot of praying and contemplating and this and that. Although, it has taken on a lot of social aspects that people, an iftar, they call it an iftar party. People come together and it's social. And Eid, which was just yesterday, they all come together and kill a lot of animals and family affair, like Christian Christmas, something. I don't know if you celebrate, Christians celebrate Christmas. It's a big event here, Christmas. Yeah, because in some countries it's not. In some Christian countries, it's not a big event. So it's, and I was also told that the richer Muslims, they go off to London during Ramadan, where no one cares whether they fast or not, and they come back for Eid. So a little bit of cheating there. But many people do take it very seriously. And they take it as a religious duty that we're Muslims. And I don't know if they have the concept that we're doing it for the pleasure of Allah, but the idea is there that this is a religion and it's a religious thing to do. But I was thinking of it in relation to these verses, where it causes a lot of suffering to the body, in the sense that just like getting kidney stones. Anyone had a kidney stone? Anyone here? It's no fun, is it? I had one. It's extremely painful. Extremely painful. Sorry? More painful than a labor pain. Labor pain of a woman. There's a painometer. How can you? How can you measure? It's difficult to say. Well, definitely, it's kidneys. Okay, no. Male-female fighting here. There's no gender wars here. I mean, definitely a kidney stone's more painful than accidentally pricking your finger when you're sewing. You never did any sewing. Brahmacharis, they have to sew their own cloth. Mothers do it otherwise. Nowadays, if there's a hole in the cloth, you just throw it away. Go and buy another one. Get your credit card out and buy another one. So definitely some things are more painful than others, but I don't know how. Anyway, it's damn painful. That's the point. So when many people get kidney stones, I just... And then the original purpose becomes... Yeah, it's religious, but it's mixed with some social things. And a lot of animals get killed. That's no fun. I remember traveling once in the daytime in Bangladesh on one of their two Eids in the year. I can't remember. One of them, they slaughter cows in public. It's in public means they just tie up a cow and they don't think that's it. They think it's something religious, but it's very horrible to see the cow. And then as you're going along, I was going in a train once, long train journey in Bangladesh, and seeing the... Anyway, enough said. So there's a religious motive, but there's no real knowledge of the personality of Godhead and what he wants. So is that pleasing to Krishna? I can't see how that's pleasing to Krishna. Killing cows. So in one sense, yeah, we congratulate that that's... I mean, there is a lot of propaganda against Islam from the Western press. I don't know if it comes over in Yugoslavia. Ex-Yugoslavia. I don't know why I said that. It's just... I know there are Croatians here and Bosnians and Serbians. And so, of course, we don't think like that, but... Is that anti-Islam propaganda? Is that strong? It's very strong in the English press of the world. Does that come? Doesn't come here. No. And definitely if you read the papers in the Arab world, the same events will be very... If you read about the same events in the Arab world, or if you read it in the New York Times, events in Palestine, you'll get a very different perspective on it. So what is news? News is what they want you to believe. So, I mean, there are definitely some laudable things. I mean, Muslims generally have very strong faith in God, and many of them still do 5 times a day prayers, and they have family values, and this Ramadan fasting is a severe austerity, but ultimately it may not be very pleasing to Krishna. Now, what about austerities in Krishna consciousness? There may be some severe austerity, or in the Vedic culture, there's Chaturmas. If one who follows Chaturmas, who can follow, actually? Krishna Kirtan can follow. He was following for some time, every 2 days eating or something like that. There's severe austerities there. Kartik, even to live in Vrindavan, unless you live in Vairagya Mahal or something, you don't understand. Vairagya Palace. You see advertisements in Vrindavan for new apartment blocks, AC, swimming pool. So it's not exactly the purpose of living in Vrindavan is to invite dog hospital and all this kind. They have this in India now, dog hospital. Dog hospital, it's ridiculous. So it can be, I mean, it's very austere to live in Vrindavan if you live without fans, electric fans, or bottled water, and all these modern conveniences. Is this very austere place to live. And mostly devotees from the West who go there, if they try to live as local people live, they generally get extremely sick. Or even before that happens, their nerves may get so frazzled that it's just too much. They can't take it. So it's very, very difficult to live there. Srila Prabhupada said that he made the facilities there at Krishna Balaram Mandir He made facilities so that Western people can come and have the advantage of living in Vrindavan without the austere living conditions. But devotees, when they first went there, they didn't know anything about living in India. They'd sleep at night without mosquito nets, and they would get malaria. And they didn't know. Gradually, devotees learned what to do. And drinking what we would, potable drinking water, that means safe to drink, wasn't available. I remember shortly after I came into India with the purpose of staying there, I was in a town in Maharashtra, I asked, as I was going shop to shop selling books, there was no bottled drinking water for sale there. He said, is there any drinking water? He said, no. He said, what do the people drink? We just drink tea, we don't drink water. Just like in Vojvodina, what is that? I was told they don't drink water, they drink wine only. Someone told me that. Someone told me that they never drink water. So what do you do? If you drink the water, you get sick, and if you don't drink the water, you die. So, and we don't drink tea. And how many limkas can you drink anyway? And that was the only alternative, but who wants to drink limkas? So, some natural austere living conditions. I mean, when we hear descriptions of India in previous times, we hear about the fabulously rich rajas and nawabs. They live in fabulously rich conditions. But many people lived in what we living in the modern Western world would consider to be very austere conditions. So that may be good for spiritual life for those who are used to it, but it may be very difficult for those who are not used to it. And on top of that, to take extra austerities, which generally all Hindus used to do, especially women, women especially would fast one day a week, and there are different fasts they would do for protecting their husband. And you can't imagine nowadays that anyone would do like that. But that was a commonly done thing. So that's also shastrically prescribed, although it's materialistic. That's within Vedic culture. There are also many austerities. It seems that nowadays people, they find it very difficult to follow. In the modern world, there's been so much emphasis on human comfort, making facilities for comfort, and even unnecessary things like tables and chairs. So, not necessary. People can sit on the floor, and if you're accustomed to it, it's just as comfortable. It's actually much better for health to sit on the floor, unless the floor is cold. But in Shastra states, don't sit on the floor without an asan, because that's also makes sense for health, apart from anything else, if the floor is cold, which here it is. It'll always be cold because this cement, which is just a few millimeters under that linoleum, if any of you thought that was wood, it's not wood, it's linoleum. It's cement, and it just takes the prana out of the body. It's naturally very cold. So, yeah, we find austerities are there, and some devotees, they follow, especially in Gauriya culture, the Kartik Vrata that is recommended, one should. And many devotees follow that quite strictly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, under the direction of Jagannath Das Babaji, he wanted to institute among his followers performance of Chaturmasya, and he expressed distress that devotees nowadays, they don't follow Chaturmas, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, they would follow it to some extent. I also, again, when I first went to India, it's changed a lot, that people, some people, householders also, they would follow Chaturmasya. I remember in one town I was in Bangladesh, and I was there in the evening after work during Kartik, people would, they would go for kirtan, either in people's houses or in temples. Everyone would follow that. And as I was going back one night to the temple where I was staying, before we had an ISKCON temple there, someone pointed out to me, oh, this house, they have kirtans every night, and the person there, he's following Chaturmas. He doesn't come out of his house for the whole 4 months, which is another austerity, if you can do that. Mostly retired people would do that. They have vanaprastha. They're meant for more austerities. So there are certainly austerity and penance is there in Vedic culture. And for us, it may seem to be very austere, but it seems that in previous times, people, they were raised like that. And if you're raised like that from an early age, it seems to be quite easy to do. Not exactly easy, otherwise there wouldn't be any penance involved, but it's doable. Ekadashi fast means on Dashami, the day before Ekadashi, you take your last meal at midday, and then the next day, Ekadashi, you fast all day, and then you stay up all night, and then the next morning at the prescribed time, you will break your fast. So actually the fast is more than one day. It's two nights and 1.5 days. And many people would do it without water, and they would go on with their activities or whatever they're doing, working in the field or whatever. So most of us can't imagine doing such a thing. Often devotees try to do that, but then they just collapse, or they're so weak that their various services or their daily activities become impeded, or they have to plan to do less service than they'd ordinarily do. But the idea is that you don't do anything less. You do what you shouldn't do anything less than you're doing, but you add more austerity. And it's not that you're supposed to sleep all the next day. No, just go on. So if people train from an early age, that might be, it's more possible to do. But it seems more and more difficult for people to do such things because bodily strength is decreasing day by day. Tatashchanu dinam dharma satyam socham shamadaya kalena balinara jannang shantayo balang smriti. Gives you a break. In Kali Yuga, with every day, dharma is decreasing. Truthfulness is decreasing. Cleanliness is decreasing. Tolerance, that means tolerance here doesn't mean tolerance in the sense of, well, if someone calls you a bad name, you tolerate. That's part of tolerance, but another part of tolerance is tolerating extremes of heat and cold. That's more the meaning of tolerance, not being disturbed. Samadhu kaksuka kshami, Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita. One spiritually advanced person, a devotee, he tolerates, he remains equipoised and undisturbed in distressful situations and pleasurable, bodily and mentally distressful and pleasurable situations. So tolerance decreases. Mercy decreases, lifespan decreases, bodily strength decreases, and mental strength decreases. So even if one is trained from a young age, and maybe we see often that the young children from a young age, they're sick right from the beginning of life. It's quite a common thing that may be also they get some injections to make them healthy, and who knows what the injections do. First thing, come into the world and the first thing you get is an injection. So, and in many cases, anyway, I shouldn't go off topic, but many times the children are born weak because their mothers and fathers also never ate any good food, and sometimes the children with the mother's breast milk, they take in all these heavy metals which have accumulated in the mother's body. So, for various reasons, it becomes seems becoming more and more difficult to perform what would previously be considered quite ordinary austerities that many people would do. It wouldn't be considered a major thing for people to perform Ekadashi fast or Chaturmasya fasting. It seems to be becoming more and more difficult for people to do so. What about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj? It's described about him that, for instance, he is described as Sakshad Vairagya Murti. Namo Gaur Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murti Vipralamba Rasambodhe Padambujayate Namaha. We offer respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. He is the ocean of Vipralamba Ras, the feelings, the ecstatic emotions of separation from Krishna. So we offer him respects, who is Sakshad Vairagya Murti. He is the direct form of Vairagya. Vairagya means non-attachment. And it's often understood to mean austerity, a vairagi. When we say, refer to a vairagi, that's generally understood to mean a person who lives a very austere life. Of course, real detachment doesn't necessarily include living a very austere life. Real vairagya is, or the best vairagya is yukta vairagya, in which one can live in opulence and not be attached to it, and use it for Krishna's service. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, for instance, he was going blind. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for medication for him and a certain diet to follow. But he refused because he thought, I don't want to do anything to look after my body. So he went blind. And there are all kinds of narrations about him that he would live next to the latrine because he was always getting disturbed. He just wanted to chant Hare Krishna and there were people coming and disturbing him all the time. So he went to live next to the latrine, which people won't like to go there because it's a contaminated place. Nowadays, everyone has a latrine inside their house, but that's a contaminated place and no one would like to go there. So apart from the smell, no one would like to go there because it's a contaminated place. But he made his residence next to the latrine because he thought, well, if I live there, then no one will come and bother me. I can just chant Hare Krishna. And he used to eat rice uncooked, soaked in Ganges water. Ganges water is muddy water. It has particles of mud in it. He would soak that in a skull and eat it. Whose skull? Human skull? I guess human skull, yeah. That's what tantra, it's the kind of thing tantrics do. It's some people who think they're quite fashionable, you might have seen. They keep on their desk a human skull. Not many people. Some people do that. It's kind of fashion. Strange fashion. But yeah, in India there is, was less so now, a very strong tantric tradition in which there's all kinds of black magic and things like that. So, I mean, he was extremely austere. And Karshayanta Shariras-tam Tapyanti Yi Tapo Janaha. This, it seems he would fit that description, Gorky Sautasbari. He performed severe austerities that harm the body. So is there anything in Shastra that you shouldn't take? Because he wasn't eating properly, you could say. He was going blind. So for anyone else, that would be considered something practically demoniac. And he didn't accept folly. People would come to him and he would reject them, because they would try to imitate him. But his austerity was not on the platform of performing austerity for the sake of spiritual advancement. His was on a completely different platform, that he just, like Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they didn't want to waste time eating. They got more important things to do. They didn't want, they saw the body as something extrinsic, and they didn't want to have any, they didn't want to give any attention to the body, because they're so much absorbed in pure Krishna consciousness. So on that platform, it's not really an austerity, because they don't have any identification with the body whatsoever. Gorky Shaw, he doesn't care whether he can see or not. He's not interested in seeing this world anyway. Of course, he was living in, first of all, in Vrindavan Dham, then Navadvip Dham, but his vision of Vrindavan Dham and Navadvip Dham is not dependent on the optic nerves and some arrangement of molecules, and the doctors, they could say better, this eyeballs and black liquid inside the eyeball and all that kind of stuff. So descriptions of greatly austere devotees, and there aren't many. I mean, Gorky Shaw is unique. But it should be understood they're on a completely different platform. But people who try to imitate them, then they become dharma-dvaji, those who make a show waving the flag of dharma. But there's a kind of austerity that great devotees perform, but it's not us. It may be considered austerity. For someone else, it would be austere, but for them, it's not austere, because austerity means that you feel the pain, or you deliberately accept some pain. But Gorky Shaw Das Babaji, his purpose was not, he wasn't thinking, let me accept some pain so that I'll become spiritually advanced. But rather, he was Vipralamba Rasambodhi. He was so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he had no contact with this world, and for him, whether he lived or died or ate or didn't eat or went blind or didn't go blind, it wasn't an issue for him at all. Of course, his disciple, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he appeared to be very different. And he made arrangements for the health of his devotees, because he had a preaching mission to do. His preaching mission was to direct people toward the ideal of Gorky Shaw Das Babaji. This is what is our ideal. Don't imitate it. Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was lecturing this in Navadvip, in the Matri Mandir. And he was lecturing on the three verses of Bhagavatam which describe the levels of the topmost devotee, the middle devotee, and the neophyte devotee. So first of all, he described the neophyte devotee. And when he spoke at length. And people listened, because they didn't have to run off here and there, and they liked to listen. They didn't They didn't have to rush off to work or to the gym or any such thing. They had time to listen. So he described at length the neophyte devotee and then the medium level devotee, and then he said, and then to the topmost level devotee, he said, well, actually there's no need to describe that, because living here in Navadvip is the lotus feet of my Guru Pada Padma. It means my guru is living here. Srila Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, you just see him and then you'll understand what an uttam adhikari is. And then he described, this is many years later, he described that although I'd been sitting with my, looking in the same direction, all during this lecture for several hours, just at that time, my head was impelled to turn, and I saw that my guru, he had been listening in the corner behind me, and he just, when he heard himself being praised, he was just leaving. So, that kind of austerity, it's not really an austerity. Deho smriti nahi ja, shangsha bandhan kaha ja. One who's not even conscious of the body, then obviously he's not bound in this material world. He's on a completely different platform altogether. So, Srila Prabhupada, he often stressed on this, that austerity, we'd have to be, what are the four limbs, the four legs of religion? Truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, and austerity. It's a very good platform. If you want to talk about interfaith and all this, anyone, I hope, should, if they're at all consider themselves religious, would agree that religion means there should be cleanliness, truthfulness, mercy, and austerity. Maybe they won't all agree that there should be austerity. Maybe not nowadays. Austerity is not a well-known word. That word you use in your language, ascesis, is it? Something like that? Struggle. No, it says in... that word used to be in English, but now it's an archaic word. So you can understand. And also words like fornication, adultery, sin, they'll all be archaic in course of time. Fornication means sex with outside marriage, as does all kinds of sex outside marriage. And adultery means sex among married couples who are not married to each other. And sin. So, I think you all know what that means. But these words will all gradually go. People won't know what they mean at all. And I see that in modern India, actually. People, they don't have any idea what the idea of pap, sin. Mayavadis, they pray, do as you like, whatever you do. It's all divine. You are divine. You are a divine being. Which is true, but we're not in divine consciousness. So, how did I get onto this? So, I lost my track. So, yeah, austerity. Srila Prabhupada stressed there must be austerity. He often quoted this, tapo divyam. We should have divine austerities. But he said in our Krishna conscious movement, the austerity is no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no intoxication. Those are the basic austerities. Which, sometimes he said this is just basic human life. But sometimes he said that's the austerity. Because to be a human being in Kali Yuga seems like a great austerity. And people, they often protest, what is this? No illicit sex, no intoxication. It's terrible. Why are you? What are you doing? This is very. And you can't raise your children like that. Take the children away. What are you doing to them? No TV, no cinema, no rising early in the morning. What is this? How can you live like that? So Srila Prabhupada said those are the minimum austerities. He also wrote in a one of his Bhaktivedanta purports that performing deity worship and distributing Krishna conscious literature, distributing books, these also require much austerity. And actually in deity worship, if it's actually executed and not as a kind of hobby, then do it if you like, and if you don't bother. If it's actually done, then it is an austerity. And pujaris, they're often up late and they have to get up early. And on after Janmashtami, others might take have a little lie-in, but the pujaris, they have to be up for Mangal Aarti, because Krishna, he doesn't lie in after Janmashtami. He's up till midnight and then he's up again at 4 o'clock in the morning. So there are many austerities, lots of work to do. There's no end of the services that a pujari in a temple where deities are properly served. There's no end. There's so many things to do. So there are many austerities in that. And in book distribution, many austerities, physical, mental, having to deal with all kinds of different people, with all kinds of work can be very frustrating. Everyone has all kinds of reasons for not taking the book. And they just think it up on the spot, and because they didn't expect to get approached. But none of them are very good. But it is an austerity to deal with all these materialistic people, and just sometimes you already say, well, it's not my propensity to go on book distribution. I don't think it's anybody's propensity. Maybe some people have some kind of sales flair, but it's not what people think of when they think of spiritual life. So it is an austerity, but that pleases Krishna. That is an austerity by which Krishna is pleased. So these are austerities in Krishna consciousness. Coming here to Lika is a kind of austerity, leaving this austere life here. Now there are more facilities, but you could have all gone to the beach in your summer holiday, or gone driving around the forest like all these people from Netherlands, especially. This is somebody from Netherlands, France, Belgium, Germany, Italy, Poland, even from Ukraine. Some people in Ukraine have enough money to drive to Croatia. You could be having a life of sense gratification 1 week a year, but you come here. So there is austerity in Krishna consciousness, but Srila Prabhupada didn't encourage or mandate that we should be very austere. He did encourage devotees to go on book distribution, to serve the deity, and he would appreciate that devotees would take trouble in doing so. But he didn't, I don't think there's any case of Srila Prabhupada telling devotees that you must perform Ekadashi fast without water or any such thing. He said it was good to do so. He didn't discourage devotees from doing so, but it wasn't something that he mandated. Maybe after some generations, that will become more of a Vaishnava culture, especially if devotees are living in farm communities and they're not going out so much for preaching, and then this kind of thing will come naturally as part of the Vaishnava life. But it wasn't something that Srila Prabhupada insisted on. So austerity is required for spiritual advancement. But unnecessary austerity, which is very harmful to the body, this is not a good idea, because we have to use the body to serve Krishna. There's in another story from the time of, or anecdote from the time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are many of these collected in that Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav book. That after one festival at the Gauriya Mutt, then one devotee, he didn't rise in the morning, and which was unusual, because you're supposed to rise early in the morning. He said to the devotee who was sleeping next to him that, I've woke up several times in the night, I'm feeling very weak and sick. He said, so why didn't you get up? He said, I'm feeling very weak and sick. And the devotee said, why didn't you call me in the night? He said, well, I didn't want to disturb the devotees. So the devotee who related this said that, well, that was a laudable sentiment and not to want to disturb the devotees, but I would have thought it would have been better if he did so, because his, rather than just die or get extremely sick, he should have got medical help. If he'd have just died, then how he couldn't have gone on serving. The body is meant for Krishna's service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said that to Sanatan Goswami when Sanatan Goswami was thinking of killing himself, because he thought, it's just, I can't serve Krishna properly. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised him and said, you can't kill yourself, you already surrendered to me, your body doesn't belong to you. It's my body. Your body is my body, and I've got a lot of work for you to do, a lot of service to you, so you just can't kill your body because you're feeling disappointed. So, with that consideration, devotees should look after their body for the sake of serving Krishna. How to do so without becoming so much bodily conscious, that also, how to keep the balance. That, because when the body does start to become a little healthy, then it feels good. And that good feeling can be an obstacle in devotional life. On the other hand, if the body is sick, it's very difficult to perform even basic sadhana or service. Anyway, there are a few thoughts about austerities. Any questions about this? Yeah, you always have a question. That's good. The mind is alive. By the way, I guess I should... I didn't do any promos for my books this time. But I have written several books which are available here. The latest one is on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. And you can read it, but you have to buy it first. That's the whole idea. Please have a look at these books. Some are available in Croatian also. We're presuming that you're all regularly reading Prabhupada's books. Are you all regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Maybe not. You are? You're putting your hand... You're reading? I saw a hand went up. That's good. You're regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Okay, that's a question.
Srila Prabhupada je rekao, ako bi neko od mojih bhakta postao moćan kao Druva Maharaj, mogao bi da me odvede na Vaikuntu.
Srila Prabhupada said, if one of my disciples became as powerful as Dhruva Maharaj, then he could carry me back to Godhead. What does that mean?
Mislim da piše da mogao bi da...
Do you all remember reading that? Srila Prabhupada wrote that?
Da li je to vizija Srila Prabhupada i kako bi našla šla Prabhupada ludira i kako bi se mogla objasniti ova vizija.
What does Srila Prabhupada mean by saying that? Well, it might seem presumptuous to read the mind of pure devotee, but we are supposed to, what he's written we're supposed to understand, and when it's not completely straightforward and easy for us to understand, then we have to apply the intelligence that he has given us. Agyanati mirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha, to understand this. Well, presumably, almost all readers of this, those who are Srila Prabhupada's followers, will understand that this is an expression of Srila Prabhupada's tremendous humility. He's carrying us all back to Godhead. So it's an expression of his humility, that he's actually thinking like that. It's difficult to understand because pure devotees think themselves very fallen when they're the most exalted. So in that sense, what they say often doesn't tally with reality. Just like Maharaj was quoting this morning, this Narottam says that Daya Koro, what is that? Nityananda, Premananda Sukhi. Who was quoting that? No, it was a lecture I was listening, a taped lecture I was listening to, recorded lecture I was listening to. Kripa Bolo Kano Koro, Ami Boro Dukhi. Narottam Das is praying that I am very fallen. So he's praying to Nityananda to give me the glance of your mercy because I'm very unhappy. So pure devotees think like that, even though they're the most exalted. Srila Prabhupada would often, sometimes he would quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita the statement of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami that jagai madhai hoite mui se papishta, puri shera kita hoite mui se loghishta. Jai mora nama shune, tara punna khoi, jai mora nama loi, tara papa hoi. He wrote that, I am more sinful than jagai and madhai, and more insignificant than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name, their pious activities are diminished, and one who says my name, they become sinful by doing so. So Srila Prabhupada in one lecture commented that Krishnadas Kaviraj, he's not just saying that as some kind of poetic embellishment, but he actually feels like that. That is the humility of a Vaishnava. Sarvottam hoya apane mane chunadham. This Chaitanya Charitamrita also says that even one is situated on the topmost level, but he thinks himself, apanake, he thinks himself very lowly and fallen. We have to become pure devotees to understand this. It's not really understandable. It doesn't, in one sense, it doesn't make sense. But in the highest sense, it is sense, and anything else is nonsense. To think of ourselves as anything but insignificance is actually nonsense, because we are insignificant. So even though Srila Prabhupada was saving the whole world, he thought himself insignificant. One who thinks himself insignificant may be empowered to save the whole world. This is not the ABCs of spiritual life. Bilva Mangal, Bilva Mangal Thakur took the needles from the eye of the hairpins that were holding the hair in place of the woman who he desired, and spoiled his eyes with that, so he couldn't see anymore. Yeah, that's not recommended for everyone. We have a lot of blind devotees. That is an example of extreme eagerness to attain Krishna consciousness. So that eagerness is good, but that shouldn't be imitated. Maybe in that time and that place and that culture, but in the modern age, that wouldn't be good preaching. It wouldn't necessarily even be very good for our own bhajan to do so. But that shows his seriousness in wanting to attain Krishna. Hare Krishna.
What kind of power does chanting the Hare Krishna mantra have without receiving the spiritual
master? What kind of power does the Hare Krishna mantra have without receiving it from a spiritual master? The holy name is always fully powerful, but how much he reveals himself to us, that's up to him. Krishna is his name. So he gives a system how to approach him. That system includes, importantly, accepting shelter, initiation from, and instruction from a spiritual master. So Krishna is always fully powerful. But how much he reveals himself to us, well, that's up to him. He gives a system by which he becomes revealed. Hare Krishna.